This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This is the Skate Podcast on WEEI.com.
Bobby Orr, behind the net to Sanderson, Orr! Bobby Orr! Orr!
For the first time in 39 years, the Boston Bruins have won the Stanley Cup.
Talking Bruins and NHL.
Sure, old-time hockey. Like Eddie Shore. Yeah.
With writer and producer Brian DeFelice.
Brian DeFelice is an emerging talent.
Bridget Prue.
Yeah, he's a little bit on the hot seat.
Burn him! And WEEI.com Bruins writer Scott McLaughlin.
Great Scott!
Lace him up for some Bees talk right now.
I'm a damn dog!
It's the Skate Pod on WEEI.
Welcome into episode 156 of the Skate Podcast. I'm Brian DeFelice, joined by Bridget Prue and Scott McLaughlin. The Bruins are now up to 80 points on the year. It's January 24th. You heard that correct. They're 38-5-4, six straight wins, 9-1-1, or 9-1-0, pardon me, in their last 10 games. Their latest win was obviously up in Montreal tonight, beating the Canadiens. Now, Montreal, they were struggling this year as it was, even at full health. So you can imagine that having a depleted roster with about 10 or 11 guys on the shelf, maybe it's an easy win. But to Montreal's credit, they worked hard tonight and made the Bruins earn the 2 points. Scott and Bridget, your initial takeaways from their first game against the Habs this year?
Yeah, I didn't think the Bruins played great, but they definitely still played well enough to win. They still controlled play for pretty long stretches. And like you said, Montreal, to their credit, like, I thought, definitely played over their talent level. You know, they still obviously weren't anywhere close to being in the Bruins class, but they weren't the total, like, if you just looked at that roster on paper, you know, with all the injuries they have, especially with Cole Caulfield out, their leading scorer, like, you'd be like, yeah, that's a pushover. Like, you're facing an AHL team and maybe not even a very good one at that. To the Canadiens' credit, like, they brought a good effort, and, you know, I thought the power play, I thought that was one area early on where it was like, oh, this is clearly a power play unit that hasn't practiced much together. Like, they looked awful, and then they even figured that out and they end up scoring a power play goal, you know, on a little bit of a fortunate bounce. So the Bruins have said it, like, they're gonna get every team's best effort pretty much every night. Like, if you're any team, any player in the league, how would you not be totally jacked up for a Bruins game at this point? Like, yeah, especially if you're out of the playoffs, it's like, you know, you're not playing meaningful games every night. So if you're going to get up for any of them, like, of course it's going to be the Bruins game. Sam Montembeau, who has actually been playing really well for the Canadiens in goal, I thought it was great tonight, even though it ended, you know, he ends up giving up 3 goals, but I thought he was really good. From the Bruins end, Swayman really solid again, you know, continues his hot stretch where we're now on like a 2-month stretch where it isn't just Linus Ullmark is the best goalie in the league. It's like Swayman's been just as hot. You look at their numbers and he's been just as good as Ullmark over like the last month and a half. It's crazy. Pastrnak gets 4 points. And it was funny. I tweeted, like, I feel like he's kind of having a little bit of an off night. He'd made a couple of really sloppy passes, a couple of like careless turnovers, and he still ends up with 4 points. And then obviously Bergeron gets the winner. And it's like, all right, this is what the Bruins do, even when they're a little off. Like, they just stick to it, and they finally break through in the third period, get the late win from Bergeron, and take the 2 points.
Yeah, and Scott, we were like, maybe we shouldn't go to Montreal this year. It's probably not going to be like, you know, it's not going to be the same as the old rivalry. But it seemed like it would have been a fun game to go to and a fun game to cover there if we had gone. We were worried about the weather and that the matchup was going to be just not close. But then closer, the closer you got to game time, you're like, well, honestly, though, they're probably still going to put up a decent fight because it's the Canadians. It's a rivalry. I mean, everybody understands, and you're playing in front of your home crowd. It'd be one thing if it was in Boston, like maybe you don't have the same motivation, but you're in front of your home crowd that came out to watch Bruins Canadians, and there's just so much history there that you'd want to like respect it, I guess. And they didn't play a bad game. They really did give them their best that they could have, and Montembeau had a really good game. Bergeron mentioned it. He said he kept him in the game, and he did. He did. Swayman, I thought, played good as well, and to Scott's point about both of them being, you know, top in the league. This was tweeted before the game, or not tweeted, put on the NHL's Instagram before the game, but the top goalies of the previous week were Jeremy Swayman and Linus Ullmark, both with under, like, right around 0.5 goals against average in last week. So that's where we're at. They have two of the hottest goalies. They have two of the most solid goalies. And there's been times where coach has said most teams would be happy to just have one. And here we are sitting here going, wow, I can't believe they actually legitimately have two guys that could start. I still think Ullmark is the better of the two as of right now, but I can't remember a goalie pair playing when both of them were playing this well at the same time. Like, I remember there was a time when Tuukka and Thomas were both playing really well and kind of taking opportunities back and forth from each other. But even in that season, which was that 2010, they were clearly times when one was better than the other. And right now, like, I feel like it's not as obvious. It's like, no, these are both top caliber goalies right now.
Yeah. Rask and Halak had a stretch like that where, you know, it wasn't a 50-50 split, but Halak would come in and like he was playing like one of the best goalies in the league when he did get in. I think that might have been the year that eventually went into the bubble, because I think that was why initially people had a lot of confidence in Halak when he had to take over for Rask, and obviously things didn't quite work out in the end, but he had a really good stretch like that most of that season.
But never were both of those goalies this good. Like, these are the two best goalies in the league as of right now. Like, it was never to that extent, only because neither of them were the top guy. You know what I mean? Like, they weren't putting up these kind of numbers. It's a good problem to have. I guess it's not really a problem at all. So it just continues to be a goalie tandem that, and I think Montgomery said after the game, I don't know where we would be without them. And it's true. Like, you have the luxury of, we talk about the fact that they haven't been able to have any load management because, you know, some guys might be reluctant for load management, but you're able to get it in the goaltending position. And it's going to be important.
As good as Montembeau was, like you guys mentioned, and he was phenomenal. No doubt kept Montreal in the game. Obviously the Bruins had a 3-1 shot advantage for the first half of the game against Montreal. But that said, the first half of the game for Boston, I definitely thought that, you know, when you play a team that's so inferior to you, and despite Montreal's best effort tonight, when you play a team that's that much beneath you, it can go one of two ways. It can go like it did against San Jose, where you're just the Globetrotters out there and you just do whatever you want. Or it can be sloppy because your opponent's kind of all over the map. And I kind of felt like the Bruins, Montreal was just kind of dragging the Bruins into that sloppy turnover game early on. And I thought the Bruins were a little bit careless with the puck at times in the first half of the game, but they certainly addressed that midway through and were much better going forward and to close out the game. And 82 game season, as good as Boston's been this year, and it's remarkable and it is historic. There's going to be games where you're off for a little bit here and there. So it's no big deal. And honestly, like, considering who the Bruins are playing in the next 3 to 4 games, it's almost like it was probably a good matchup to have tonight to kind of like, you know, just get those kinks out on the road after traveling and kind of like be like, all right, like we got away with it against Montreal, but we're not going to get away with not that they had a bad start, but you get, they just got to play on their toes when they face Tampa, Florida, Carolina, and Toronto.
Yeah, and also worth mentioning, I think one of the most important developments in this game is Taylor Hall ended his goalless drought, gets his first goal in 16 games. You know, we had talked about him on the last podcast, how he still had some good games during that stretch. You know, Jim Montgomery had said Sunday he thought he had a really good game that night.
Yeah, and he said it's only a matter of time. And it really did feel like that.
Yes and no. Like, I thought he was playing well, but then tonight, like, I was looking up, you know, stuff like expected goals, like individual expected goals, and his had been down. Like, he hadn't been getting as many chances as he was earlier in the season, and, you know, there's still some bad luck involved because...
Yeah, I was going to say, it felt like those chances were missed for him just because he got so many bad bounces. Like, one of these times he was going to get a good bounce, and he did today.
Yeah, so, and I thought he had another good game all around just besides the goal, but to get that goal is big. Like, when you're a player like Hall, you can stick to the rest of your game, you can, you know, keep plugging away, keep doing the right things, but ultimately, like, you know, part of your job is to score, and you want to score, and you put that pressure on yourself no matter, you know, how aware you are of, hey, I'm doing other things well, no matter how much your team's winning. Like, anyone who has had the kind of career Taylor Hall has had, you want to score, you hate going through a drought like this. So, you know, I thought that was a pretty big goal, and just for him on an individual level. And obviously it was important for the Bruins too, because there was still 0-0 at the time.
And Brian, your question last podcast was, you know, what do the Bruins need to see on this road trip? Or it was something to the degree of like, what do you want to see out of them on the road trip that they need to do better? And I think my answer was, Taylor Hall needs to score, and he did it the first game of the road trip. So they got that going. Also, I wanted to mention the check line obviously had a good night, and I want to highlight Pavel Zacha though, just for a second, because there were times when that line was together, cause they did get split up a little bit. But when that line was together, where I felt like Pavel Zacha was like the most dangerous guy on the ice, and he was kind of driving play for a little bit of that game, where normally you see Krejci being the decision maker and Pasternak being the threat. But I felt like at times I was like, I want him to shoot it right now. He was playing really well. And he did great on the penalty kill, forced a turnover, almost scored shorthanded. I thought he was playing better than he had, not that he'd been playing bad, but just like he's reached a new level.
Zacha looks very comfortable, very comfortable. Obviously, as you alluded to, the points have really started to pile up for him since signing that extension. But even before that, like even when he was a little bit snake bitten, like you just saw his hockey IQ, and you see how when you watch him with Krejci and Pasternak, but like watch him with Krejci in particular, because one of Krejci's MO the last, you know, 15, 16 years has been just how well he thinks the game. And you can tell when they're playing together that Zacha's on the same wavelength as Krejci when it comes to, in transition. Like, Zacha knows the sweet spot to go because he can sense that Krejci's going to cut to the middle, or Krejci's going to slow down or speed up. And Zacha just knows where to get open. And that's just the telltale sign of a smart hockey player. And as far as Taylor Hall goes, I just feel like it's going to be very important. I can't shake this feeling and mark it down here on January 24th, but I just can't shake this feeling that, like, if the Bruins are going to go on this special run that we're all hoping that they do, I have this feeling that Taylor Hall is going to be a huge reason for it. And he's going to have some big goals and some big moments and some hopeful mismatches for the Bruins. And so I'm not necessarily looking for Hall to like be the MVP guy night in and night out that he was in 2017. But like, I just want to see him play with confidence when it matters most this year, because when he's playing with confidence, like you saw tonight, he was able to get the monkey off of his back, and like he was just playing on his toes tonight. He was having initiative, and the way he would just go around a net, like he could just separate so easily when he's on his game. And I think a big part of his game is confidence. He's a very smart player, but he can be his own worst enemy at times. And I think that a goal like tonight will go a long way for him for the next handful of games, dozen games, but he's going to be a big, big factor for them in the playoffs. And hopefully when that time comes, he's playing with confidence.
Worth mentioning, yeah, and though, that it didn't come on the third line. It came on the power play. And so, like, production, I want to see him get the production up when he's playing on that third line with Coyle and Frederick on the ice with him.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Like, that's exactly it. Because, Brian, like, to your point about mismatches, that third line should, if he's on it, like, should have a lot of mismatches and should be a very tough matchup for opponents, but they become that if Hull is putting up points, whether that's scoring or setting up Coyle and Frederick. You know, that line can play well and have possession and hold on to pucks in the offensive zone. Like, I think they can do that all day long against pretty much anyone, but then actually converting that into goals is what really takes them to another level and puts them in that conversation of like best third line in the league, which they might be anyways, but it's, you know, when they're actually starting to put up goals and Hall's producing the way we know he's capable of, like, that's when you're really talking about a line that no other team's bottom six can match up with.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You know what else struck me tonight watching this Bruins team is that they can win in so many different ways. They can win when they're not, when they don't have their A game. And on some nights they can win if they don't even have their B game. And the same can be said for certain players on the roster. Like, for example, tonight, and maybe the analytics will contradict this, but I thought that David Krejci, especially in the first half of the game, was not great. I just felt like he was bad in the faceoff circle. I thought he was kind of lackadaisical and a little half-assed with some passes and some turnovers, and just kind of seemed like he was a bit lethargic out there. But as the game goes on, he obviously gets a nice goal, a nice purposeful shot from Pastrnak meant for Krejci to tip it. And that's exactly what he did. He out-battled his guy in front and was able to get a stick on it and give the Bruins the lead at the time. And what that told me was like, and look, I've watched Krejci for a lot of years, so it's not like I didn't know this already, but it was just, you know, reaffirmation that there are guys in this team too, like the Bruins just have game changers and difference makers, and they don't necessarily have to have their greatest game, but at any moment they can impact the game. And that was another example, and that's another reason why the Bruins are so successful. And like, the goaltending is great. I mean, the goaltending is more than great. It's very important to have that. And the structure the team plays with and the swagger is all great, but they have game changers.
Yeah. And like you saw with the top line too, where, you know, I thought whether it was Smith up there or Pastrnak up there, like they had shifts where they had possession and they're creating some chances, but, you know, weren't converting into goals, weren't really converting into great grade A chances. But then all it takes is just, you know, okay, throw out the perfection line for an offensive zone faceoff in crunch time. Bergeron wins it, you know, get it towards the net and boom, you know, game winning goal. Like, same sort of idea, you know, like Jim Montgomery had a quote after the game in his Nesson interview where he said, like, typical Boston Bruins. And it's like, yeah, that's pretty much what this is becoming. Like, you just have guys who make a difference when it matters in the third period. And, you know, yeah, that the check line with Krejci tipping the Pastrnak shot and then the reunited perfection line off a faceoff, like both do it in the third tonight.
Yeah, Bergeron's goal. And then that, by the way, Pasta was double shifted because he was just out there with the check line and then he stayed on to take the faceoff. And especially towards the end of the game, you see that, you see Montgomery go to that because he knows, like, okay, he still has gas in the tank. Let's just use it. We'll especially in a close game, the way it was, and it worked out. Because Bergeron ends up scoring that go-ahead goal with like 3 minutes left. And then Pastrnak gets a goal into the empty net. But still not a bad goal. Still like, shot it from all the way at center ice. So it was interesting to see the way that Montgomery kind of tinkered just like in the smallest ways throughout the game. Because at one point in the first period, he did have Hall back on the second line, Pasta up on the perfection line, and Smith back with Coyle and Frederick for a shift or two. Wasn't really that long, but the tinkering was still going on.
There was lots of
tinkering tonight.
A lot of tinkering.
Montgomery was all over the place. He was having a field day. Like,
I mean, Scott, what was the most surprising combo that you saw tonight? I mean, there was Frederick, Greer, and Kopanen. I think every combination could have been there was.
There was at least one shift with Foligno on the top line. There was a full Marchand, Bergeron, Foligno shift at one point. So
it was Hall, Bergeron, and Marchand.
Yeah,
he did a little bit of everything, and that's a good thing too.
Just it's sprinkling like, it in, yeah, just trying it out.
Little ice cream bar.
Well, I kind of got the impression like when he reunited the perfection line like pretty early in the first. Couldn't have been like more than halfway through the first period, and you're like, oh, that's kind of early for, you know, a 0-0 game in Montreal. But I kind of got the sense that like he felt like no one had really, you know, it had been like a little bit of a quiet start and no one had really provided the spark on the ice. And I just thought like he was like, okay, this is what I'm going to do to provide the spark. Like, you know, there hasn't been a big hit. No one's dropped the gloves. No one's, you know, made a great offensive play. All right, I'm going to do this and wake you guys up. And it seemed to work. Like, I thought they finished the first period stronger. It didn't result in a goal quite yet. But yeah, like I think he it was like, all right, this isn't working. Like, we're not awake. So I'm just going to try to do something to get guys' attention.
You got to be three moves ahead, Scott. You can't be reactive. You got to be proactive. So he was trying to think ahead. Moving the pieces around, tinkering, figuring it out.
I want to get to a couple of things real quick. I want to get to the state of the Bruins Canadiens rivalry, and maybe obviously it's kind of at a low point right now. There's not much going on, but maybe there's an idea in my mind that maybe could spark that again going forward. But before that, what did you guys think of?
I think I know what your idea might be, but we can get to it.
Okay. I think you know exactly what I'm thinking. So but before we get to that, Bridget's like, what the hell are you guys talking about?
Apparently you're telepathic and I'm just missing something.
So
I am. This is proven. I said last podcast I had a gut feeling it was gonna be Mark McLaughlin. It wasn't a gut feeling, it was a telepathic feeling.
Yeah, no, I had to make sure he didn't just call up his cousin and like get the inside information and pretend he was just a psychic, one of those fake psychics. But no, he might be a real psychic.
So we have a quick
disclaimer for anyone who doesn't know, I'm actually related to Mark McLaughlin. Just have to clarify that every time.
It's not really his cousin, but they're both from Billerica. So, and they're both McLaughlin, so they communicate telepathically.
So we have psychic Scott. But we also have transparent AJ, and I wanted to bring up the AJ Greer interview with Sophia in the intermission. I thought that was a nice interview. And Scott knows better than anybody because he did a one-on-one sit down for the Skate Pod for like, I think it was like 17 to 20 minutes. And I think Scott only asked for like 10. And I think he
would have gone for like an hour and a half, I think. So
you could tell like Sophia has like her questions that she goes to. I think she pencils in like a 45-second interview every intermission, but AJ just took the first question and ran with it. But I want to get you guys' opinions on some of the stuff that he talked about. He talked about he was basically just talking about he's a native of Quebec, I think the Montreal area, and
he was
basically asked like what it meant for him to play in Montreal and at the Bell Center, and he talked about it meant the world to him, and that, you know, there was a time in his life where he emptied his bank account to buy tickets to go to a Habs game. But he also talked about just how grateful and cognizant this Bruins team is of just the reality of the world. Like a lot of athletes, a lot of, you know, sports teams or leagues, whatever, they can kind of get caught up in their own little world. But he talked about how like the Bruins take a lot of pride in everybody who works within the organization, but also for everybody outside of the organization, like fans and family and friends who, you know, make everything worthwhile, and that they're not oblivious to the fan support on the road games and at home, always having a sold out building. And yes, he talked about all this in a intermission interview. So I thought it was a nice interview. He's a great person to talk to, and I wanted to get you guys' takes on that.
Yeah, I thought it was good. You know, you covered all the key points there, but we've gotten this vibe from the start. Like, I think you definitely heard it, like when I talked to him, you know, before the season, of just how appreciative he is of this opportunity and, you know, of just getting a chance here and of like what he's gone through to get here. And I think that's where like that appreciation for everyone else around him comes in, is because there's been times where he's needed some help from people around him and needed support and, you know, hasn't been able to do it himself. So, you know, maybe 4 years ago or whatever, he might not have had that, or, you know, might not have fully appreciated opportunities that he got or had, you know, wasn't able to take advantage of them. And you get the sense that like, he's just in such a better spot now of knowing, you know, how easily you can waste an opportunity if you don't really like hone in and do what you have to do to make the most of it. And I also feel like it's, you know, sort of related to this, like it obviously he's playing more now because of injuries, but you know, for a while it's like he was rotating in and out as 12th, 13th forward. And I think he's really been like a perfect guy for that role, because for him, just being on a team like this and sticking in the NHL is huge. And like, he's so appreciative just of having that, that, you know, he's not going to be sulking around if he goes 2 weeks without playing or something. Which I think, you know, I asked Jim Montgomery last week when it became clear that like, or I think it was Saturday, when it was clear that like, Brandon Carlo was going to play Sunday, even after getting banged up. And, you know, I asked him, I was like, obviously this means it's another chance where Zboril might've been able to get into the lineup that he didn't, you know, like how tough is this? And Montgomery said like, there was a time where like, it was really tough for like a month or so. You know, he could tell like it was tough on Zboril not playing. And he said he feels like his attitude's gotten better now as he's kind of come to embrace the fact that he's still a part of this team and like they are going to need him at some point. But like, that's just tough. Like, you know, Zboril's a guy who's played at every level he's been at. Like, he hasn't been in this role before. So I think, you know, Greer is kind of a good example of like what you want as someone who's spot in the lineup night to night isn't guaranteed, but who's like obviously who's gonna bring it when he does get in.
Yeah, and just to like put a finishing thought on the Greer stuff, like he's been very reflective and open about like, it just, you just get the vibe that he's being very genuine, and it's almost like we're seeing him like as he realizes, just like, I don't know if you guys have ever gone through this where you're like, oh my God, I'm doing it. You know what I mean? Like, you're like, I've been hoping my whole life for this. And you're like, oh wait, I got to take a step and just like look around and be like, oh wait, I'm playing at the Bell Center. Like I'm here. It's just another good story, really, if you think about the work that he put in to turn things around for himself, and where he's been able to, you know, get his life to. I think he got engaged in the off season and got a new puppy, and like he made the team, and he's just, it's nice to see him get to just reflect and have like a moment. Cause I think he was just having a moment with his own thoughts, but the camera also happened to be in front of him with Sophia. So we get to hear a little bit of it.
Yeah. I thought it was awesome. So Mystic McLaughlin, tell me what I was thinking. What's going to spark this Bruins Canadiens rivalry?
The Canadiens winning the lottery and getting Connor Bedard.
Yeah. That's it. I mean, if you look at Montreal's team, and tonight's a bad example because they had so many guys hurt, I really do think they have some really good pieces, some good young pieces. I think, obviously, Cole Caulfield is great. Try saying that one quick. Nick Suzuki's awesome. I like the Arbor Jack Eye kid on defense for what he brings. They have a Caden Gooley, I think his name is. He wasn't playing tonight. Gallagher's is still a part of that team. They have some pieces, is my point. Who's the kid they got?
I like Jordan Harris, kid from Northeastern.
Jordan Harris. Was there a Mariner?
Even though that's a rivalry to BU.
Was there a second hockey East player out there from Merrimack on defense that Jack said? I thought Jack said.
Yeah, that. Jonathan Kovacevic. Yeah. He's a pretty good player too.
He was talking about how he had a 4.0 GPA and he's a civil engineer. Has a degree in civil engineering.
Yep.
Smarter than this podcast.
Who's the Kirby Dock's a young player they got in a trade. He had 2 goals tonight. And of course, Slavkovsky, who they drafted first overall this past year. So they have some young pieces, and they're also in a position to potentially get Connor Bedard. What would you guys think about watching that for the next 15-plus years?
They're going to be peaking at the opposite time the Bruins are going to be peaking. Like, it could go the swing the other way real quick, and that the Bruins are like in a hole and they're like, you know what I mean? It's just, I feel like they're on two teams that are swinging opposite directions.
I mean, the Bruins are adamant that that's not going to happen, right? That's what the big question was going.
No, but and they won't suck, but it's not going to be like, they're not going to be competing at the same time, most likely for like the top spot in the East.
Yeah.
But they definitely could end up at like the same level. Like, Bruins take a little bit of a step back.
Maybe next season,
you know,
or
Canadians
the season
aren't
after.
Canadians are still far ways away from being like a contender, but you know, Bedard would help at least accelerate them back to like playoff contention and, you know, potentially, you know, the next Bruins Canadians playoff series at some point, which we've now gone, because it's obviously not going to happen this year. Will be 9 years since they last met in the playoffs. I think
that's insane.
The longest stretch they ever went without meeting the playoffs was 10, from 58 to 68. So, yeah,
that's even more impressive though, because there was fewer teams.
Well, yeah, you're right. That was just like a stretch where the Bruins sucked. Like, I think they missed the playoffs like 8 of those years or something. And then they landed some kid named Bobby Orr and got good again. So to tie a bell back to Connor Bedard,
Connor Bedard's
you know, that kind of franchise changing player. Because, you know, the thing that sucks, like if you're Montreal, is they just won the lottery, but they won it in a year where there wasn't a superstar number one. So,
yeah,
you know, it was all the debate was like Slavkovsky or Wright. And obviously, you know, I mean, Wright's back in juniors now, like neither one really, at least as a rookie, has made a huge impact. I think they've both had some struggles. So, you know, we'll see how they continue to develop, but neither one was a slam dunk like Bedard would be.
And, you know, looking at the standings right now, which is why I was just silent for about 10 seconds, but Montreal's actually 26th in the league, and obviously it's a 32 team league now. So, I mean, behind Montreal in the standings is Vancouver, San Jose, Arizona, Chicago, Columbus, and Anaheim. I'll tell you who the worst team to have Bedard go to as far as for the league long term would be Columbus. No disrespect to Columbus, but that would be very boring. At least in like Arizona, I don't know
if that's a great option either.
Well, I do think they're trying to, like, I do think for the Coyotes though, they're trying to really build what they have in what's the town of Tempe?
Yeah. I mean, like, you can sell a narrative about, you know, a franchise savior. Like,
yeah,
if they, you know, he comes in and they start winning and he keeps the team there. Like, you can build something around that. And look, I mean, Phoenix is still like a huge market. It's just been mostly untapped in terms of NHL because the Coyotes really haven't been good enough to capitalize on it.
And like, you know, if you're the NHL, Montreal, Chicago, like, you know, to have that kid go to an original six, you know, I think they would like that. But currently,
they're rigging the lottery, Brian. Is that what I'm hearing?
What's that?
They're rigging the lottery. Is that what you're?
Well,
just so happens it, to pop maybe, up Montreal.
Maybe they would, except for the fact that the team that's in dead last right now is Anaheim, and give them some sexy new uniforms. Bring them back to the Mighty Ducks uniforms, and stick Bedard with Trevor Zegras for the next 15 years.
Yeah,
I think there'd be a couple highlights of those two. So that would be pretty exciting if he went to Anaheim for that, because Anaheim, they'll be good at some point again too. But
I there's one thing I'm pretty sure the Bruins aren't winning the lottery. So
yeah, I don't think
you can
try
that. You can probably hopefully, put your money on that.
Hopefully they can win a different lottery, and that's called the Stanley Cup, because that's the most toughest prize to win. Winning the cup's harder than winning the last place lottery pick, I would say.
Yes, but, it is.
Anyway, so although guys,
they do have the ultimate lottery luck guy in Taylor Hall, who's been there for the lottery draw and won his team the first pick multiple times in his career.
That is true. It makes you wonder how Edmonton has been so bad despite having McDavid and Draisaitl, because they also had like 18 other first round picks in 10 years. So
yeah, well, Nugent Hopkins was a high draft pick for them, was he not?
Yeah, he was. At least he's like a respectable player, but like the one that like really like was not great was Neil Yakupov.
Yeah, he did that. His breakout's coming, Brian.
He in the Russian beer league. He did that celebration at center ice after like a regular season tying goal, and they kicked him out of the league essentially. So he was like touted as like a Alex Ovechkin type prospect when he was coming out of Sarnia. Cause like he was kind of like an electric player. He was Russian and he was very enthusiastic, and they drew some parallels there, but that didn't work out too well. I think he's filling the water bottles now for his local team, but
yeah, he ended up a little bit closer to Alex Kokolchev.
Yeah. Yakupov wishes. So guys, I don't know if you wanted to dabble in the upcoming games that they have, or we could just hold off until they're prevalent and we could talk about them afterwards. But I'm gonna throw it to you guys how you want to finish this episode off. If we're good to go, then we're good to go, but up to you guys.
Yeah, I think we did a little bit of preview on the last podcast, so I don't really think we have to do that again. But obviously, you know, you get this one out of the way, you get the win, and now it's the stretch of the real test, the other contenders in the East, where you get Tampa, then the Florida Panthers, who obviously aren't as good this year as they were last year, but still a good team, Carolina, and then Toronto. So that's what you get going into the All-Star break. Really good stretch, a really good test. Should be interesting games. I don't have any sort of like detailed preview of them other than just looking forward to watching them.
Yeah, we kind of went as in depth as we could have last podcast. We kind of got carried away talking about like how the matchup with Carolina would be in the playoffs. And anyway, yeah, I think we're good. We'll just record right after that Tampa Bay game.
Lovely. Well, thank you all for listening. Hope you enjoyed the Bruins versus Les Habitants, and we will talk to you soon. Thanks for listening. Thank you.